Hello, listeners. I want to apologize for the upcoming audio you're about to hear. I don't know what happened when I was doing the interview. For some reason, my microphone must have been off. I don't even know, but it's such a great interview with Trisha and her audio is perfect. So I hope that you can just kind of ignore my muffledness and really listen to the message that she has. And she talks most of the time, so hopefully it won't drive you too crazy. But again, I apologize.
Welcome to Widow Too Soon. This is Michelle Bader Ebersole. I'm sitting here with my new friend, Trisha Thyre. Did I say your last name right?
It's actually Terry.
What? It's T.
I know. Doesn't look like it. It's French. It's strange.
Oh my goodness. I should have asked you. That's a basic thing I should have asked you before we started. But everyone else, when they see it written, is going to think what I thought.
They will. They will.
I'm sure that's a really common thing you run into because I always run into batter for Bader. So I get it. Except for the teacher, I'm like, you need two D's to make a batter, not, you know. But anyways, so I'm sitting here with my new friend. We actually met because I was a guest on her, I wouldn't call it a podcast. What do you call what you do where you interviewed me?
Hope Widows. So it's a private widow community for support.
Yes, thank you. That's a great way to explain it. I didn't know how to explain it. And so someone found me on Instagram. Was it you? I think it was somebody else. Maybe referred
it was me. Somebody else. It was scheduled. Yeah. They found a lot of people that way, right. I found a lot of cool people that way.
Yeah. So we got connected and I was able to speak with her widows. And then I heard her story on the same platform. And I was like, you've got to share over here if you'd like to. So thanks for being here today. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Let's just start with, tell us a little bit about your story. Well, it's probably a lot about your story. Like, you know, I like to back it up because I like to know this too, like all the way back to when you met your late husband and like kind of what that was like in your story. And then, you know, to all the way to where you are today. And we got as much time as you want. Like we do all different lengths, so don't even worry.
Okay. So I met my husband in 2003 and we sat next to each other at church one Sunday. I attended a mega church in Fayetteville, North Carolina, which is really close to Fort Bragg. And I, unlike everyone else I knew, was not interested in dating a soldier. I was going to stay home close to my parents for the rest of my life. My dad was military and we had moved around a lot. And I knew I wanted my kids to grow up near their grandparents. So I was not interested in him when he sat next to me. We chatted at church. All these girls came up to me and were like, who's that guy that you were talking to? And you know, the rest is history. He referred to himself as a stalker success story. We stayed friends for a year until he finally convinced me to go out with him. And then we dated for a year, were engaged for a year and got married in 2006. And by the time we got married, he was living at Fort Campbell in Kentucky. So we moved right after the wedding and a year later moved again. And we found out a month after we were married that he had thyroid cancer and he had his thyroid removed right before deploying to Iraq. Didn't do any treatment because it's not a cancer that really spreads. And then he returned from that trip, went to grad school. We ended up in New York where he was teaching at West Point and then went back to Fort Campbell in about 2000. We suffered from infertility for several years. So we had twins in 2012. And late that year, he had a seizure that I didn't know at the time was a seizure. And he left for Afghanistan and came back right after our twins' first birthday. And that week he had several seizures. And I knew at the time that that's what was happening. And so I knew something was wrong. I went ahead and made him schedule an appointment with his group surgeon because he was special forces. And they ended up doing an MRI. I dropped him at work. And an hour later, the surgeon drove him home to tell us that he had gotten a call from the hospital, that the results showed that there was like a 7-centimeter mass on his brain and that they had gone ahead and called Vanderbilt and that the head of neurosurgery there was going to see him on Monday, because this was Friday afternoon, Monday morning before that their clinic opened. So we spent the weekend praying, and his mom came from Ohio to be with us and to help with our 2 1-year-olds at that time. And within a week, he went in for brain surgery. And at the time, the doctors had told us, you know, it's definitely a grade 4. It would not be that big. It's an infiltrating tumor. With treatment, we expect, you know, 6 to 12 months.
Oh, wow. So
after that surgery, they came back and said it was a grade 3. And so we rejoiced. We figured that that's a God thing, because they told us it was worse than that. They still only gave him 12 to 18 months to live with treatment at that point. And they did say, because of this large mass that it was, they would radiate his whole brain if they did radiation. And they did not expect that that would change life expectancy by very much, but it would have left permanent brain damage for him from that point. And he was a brain guy. He taught at West Point. He taught math. He studied and read textbooks for fun every day.
Oh, wow.
And so we decided to go the non-traditional route. He did a lot of lifestyle change, started eating healthy, got rid of sugar, and did a lot of non-traditional treatments. And so we ended up back at West Point for him to teach, since he was not deployable anymore and he did not want to leave the military. And so we had our second daughter, and she was, so we had our twins, and then Kinsey, who is my youngest. And he ended up having a second brain surgery right around the 3-year mark from that first brain surgery. And after that, the recovery was not 100%. Yeah. So there were some deficits there. He had a lot more seizure activity. We got used to that being a part of our life. So he had seizure meds every day, multiple times a day. And the kids and I just, you know, would lay hands on him and pray for him when he had a seizure. We didn't go to the hospital or anything, just because they were a normal part of life.
Yeah.
We moved back to Ohio in 2016. And he started going to grad school. He was super ambitious and had all kinds of goals. In the summer of 2017, he had got a stomach bug, and he was having trouble keeping meds down. And so I had called his parents and asked them to come, and we could take him to the hospital for them to give him his seizure meds by IV. And the second day that he was in the hospital, he had a seizure. They didn't have the correct meds to give him, which we didn't know till later, but he had a seizure that he never woke up from. Oh. And so he passed away on August 15th of 2017. And he started fighting to breathe in the middle of the night, and I called family to come and be with us, still not knowing that that was anywhere near the end at that point in time, because he'd walked into the hospital on his own.
Right.
And by 10 a.m. he was gone. And I went home. At the time, our twins were 5 and our daughter was 3. And I took them into the bedroom and sat them down on the floor and had to explain to them that, you know, Daddy and I left 2 days ago, but that Daddy wasn't coming home. And that is probably, beyond a shadow of a doubt, one of the hardest conversations that I've ever had to have, is explaining to my 3 and 5-year-olds that their dad was never coming home.
Wow. So it was a shock. You knew it's kind of like my situation, where we knew it was coming, but then it, boom, happened.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So in shock.
And with brain cancer, you know, they tell you that the brain starts, it stops working and things slowly shut down. And there were a few days that last summer where he would forget how to walk. And then he would be fine. He'd stand up and walk and he'd remember. And so it wasn't the loss of the use of them. It was more the remembering it.
Okay.
And there came a point where, you know, the hospital had said, you know, you'll need a hospital bed at some point, and you'll need a ramp and some things like that. And they had talked about it while we were there, the day before he passed. And they said, you know, we're going to put this on the list for the VA to go ahead and send somebody out next month to start working on those things. Because with brain cancer, it can take a long time while the brain slowly you know, stops right. functioning before the rest of your body catches up. It was not something that we expected to just be sudden
right.
the way that it happened. And so while we still prayed and believed for a miracle.
Yep.
And so there are, you know, there are people who are like, well, you knew he had cancer for 5 years, you knew it was coming. But we didn't know it right. was coming then for sure. Right. Mm-hmm. It still caught us off guard. We still were praying for and believing for a miracle, but we did think we would have more time.
Right. That's so difficult. And how old was he when he passed away?
He was 41.
Mm. Yeah.
42.
That's the age of my husband was too.
Yeah.
It's way too young.
Yeah.
It's so hard. I'm so sorry for your loss and what you've been through. So take us through, what were those first few days, weeks, months? What was it like after, like, it's a shock, it happens. What was life like for you?
You know, it definitely was a shock. I think there was a period of time where it was sort of just surviving.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. going through the motions, because I had young kids. And I've told other widows who have older children who, you know, are in that grief and they're able to grieve really heavy straight from the start. I couldn't stay in bed. Like
right.
every day I had to get up and be on all day. And then in the evenings I would crash, and that the quiet, the silence, the emotional mm-hmm. roller coaster of, you know, bedtime was his thing. He took care of the kids. Mm-hmm. And so that time of day was really hard for me.
Oh, I'm sure.
And then, you know, they're in bed and you finally have this moment and there's silence. You feel how alone you are. We did have a lot of family where we were living at the time, and it was nice for them to, you know, reach out to us some, but they mm-hmm. all were grieving as well. My family lived out of state okay. from where we were. And so they reached out as well. But I think I didn't know what I needed. And so none of them knew how to help with what I needed.
Right.
I had a couple of friends who brought meals to me, who mm-hmm. had known his family growing up, but that I had never met before. And those friends became my closest friends, because mm-hmm. they listened to me. They heard me say what time of day was hard, and they showed up then. They would come to my house and help with bedtime. They would call mm-hmm. me every night to make sure that I was all right, and text and say, hey, how's it going today? Just so that I wouldn't feel alone. That's and they are my closest friends now. They are the people wow. who we didn't know, we wouldn't have probably been friends if it hadn't have been for this. But they were the hands and feet of Jesus to me in that time.
Wow.
Exactly what I needed.
Right. We love those people who, instead of there's people who mean well, but they say, let me know if there's anything you need. You don't know what you need.
We don't know what we need.
So when there are the people that just do it, like those friends.
Yes.
So nice.
Yes. I was talking to Tiffany who yesterday about it. And she was like, somebody asked me, like, did she say that she needed somebody? And she's like, no, she just told me that that was a hard time of day. And I was like, that's exactly, I would have never said, hey, call me every night.
Right.
Like, you know, I know you have a husband and everything, but you should check on me every day. She just heard that there was a need there and did it. And her husband supported it. He still supports her calling me when she knows I need it.
That's awesome. And that's just a reminder to us when we see friends going through hard things, to listen and hear in what they're saying, like, oh, that's what they need.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like every widow and widower I talk to says nighttime is the hardest. It always was for me, because you feel the loneliness of no one in your bed anymore.
Yep.
And just like the silence and I had such a hard time. My daughter, she was, let's see, 15 at the time. No, she was 14. She slept in my bed for 3 months. Like, we both needed, I was like, I can't be alone. And she didn't want to be alone. And it was just, and I realized I'd never like been in a house without Luke, because he didn't like travel. He was on disability most of our marriage. And so the only time I'd ever been away from him at our house was when he was in the hospital. And so it was such a strange, eerie feeling. And there's something about when like someone is there and then they're gone, like that empty feeling in the house, like you can't explain it. And it sounds like you, you know, probably went through something similar. And then you've got little ones. Mine were older. I mean, it's hard no matter what. There's different parts that are hard, you know, but then all of a sudden, like you're, it's so hard for them to comprehend being that young.
Yes.
And then you're dealing with your own grief, and then you don't have a choice. You have to get out of bed. You have to function, and you have to get going. So, so you, you know, you go through the shock, all of this, and what helps you? Like, were there any specific like verses or songs or things or like that you did, you know, maybe for our listeners who are in the first 3 months, like what did you do to help you get out of that?
So I would say the closest I've ever been to God in my whole life was after Ben passed.
Yep,
because I had nothing else. That was it. That's all I had. And early in that year, at the start of 2017, I had started a blog, Choosing Joy in Every Moment, because God had really laid on my heart that year for joy to be my word. And I didn't know what that year was going to hold for us, but I felt like God was telling me to be intentional about choosing joy every day, and that it was a choice. I had to choose to see the good. So, you know, I blogged about a day without seizures. I blogged about like somebody showing up to mow my yard, and just tried to look for something to be grateful for in every single day. And I do feel like in a way, God prepared me by setting the stage for that before I lost him, because while I did not choose joy every day after losing him, it did help me to get on that track where I knew that I needed to be able to look for the good in things. And there's a verse in Proverbs 31 where it's, she's clothed with strength and dignity, and she laughs without fear of the future.
Yeah.
And it's that laughing without fear of the future that I tried to embrace in the first half of that year, and especially after that. Like the necklace with that scripture on it, just so that I would remind myself, you know, it's okay to laugh. Like we want to still see the good on the other side of it.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting in my counselor's office just, you know, 2 months after losing him, and saying like, no, I really want to like thrive. Like I want to get from here to here, because I know there's steps and things that I need to do in order to come out on the other side. And her saying, you know, it is okay for you to just survive this season right now. Like you don't have to thrive.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is not me. That's not the way either. I do life. Like I like work my way through things.
Yeah.
So it didn't happen as fast as I would have wanted it to. I spent a lot of time clinging to God and saying, now what? Now what?
Right.
And I do believe, and there are still hard days in there, anniversaries and holidays, and, you know, birthdays, and where his presence is missed so much, and it's missed so much for my kids. But I feel like that God, you know, there is a hope that is found in scripture, and there's a hope that's found in knowing that there is a purpose and a plan for everything that happens, even if we can't see it. And that is what has kept me going, is knowing that I might not be able to see the why, like why we had to go through this, why my kids have to grow up without their dad. But I believe that it's because God does have a purpose,
right?
That he's using all of those things for good, even if I don't see that good.
Right. Exactly. And how are your kids doing?
You know, they are doing really well. We have gone through, they did counseling for a while. We've done some grief work with them. They went through a phase where my son didn't talk about it much, you know, at all for the first 6 months or a year or so. And when they were in kindergarten and I homeschooled, in first grade, they went to a university model school. So they were there for just a couple of days a week. And I remember his teacher calling me in and saying, you know, I think he's really struggling because he talks about his dad a lot. Like every time the kids are talking about their dads, he's like, oh, my dad died. And I was like, well, his dad did die.
Yeah.
And if he's talking about it, I'm really glad because it means he's processing and working through things that I don't see at home. And I'm glad he's telling somebody.
Yeah.
And so we spend a lot of time intentionally talking about their dad, even now. He has an analytical mind just like his dad. And so I remind him of that and he gets excited about it because there are things that he does and says that are just like him. Mm-hmm. I think my youngest and it's so common to just talk about Ben in our everyday. We spend a lot of time with Ben's family. We travel to Ohio. We go on vacations with their cousins. And so they get to see a little bit of what their dad was like in his brothers. Mm-hmm. And my youngest is the one who still will be doing something. And she'll say, I wish daddy was here for this. Or, and she was three. So her memories are what we have shared. And so she does have some, you know, stories that she tells about him and things that they've done that might be things that she actually remembers, but there's a lot that she shares that is because of things she's heard. On the whole, I do think that they have done really well with processing the loss. And there will always be a void there. Their dad is not here on earth. And that is where he should be. He should be. But they, I think, have managed very well to be great little kids who are working hard with everything that they've got. Mm-hmm. And I am super proud of that. But I also think that it is not something where you just stop talking about it. Them to heal. I do think that talking about it is good for them. And I think that it's good for them for the rest of their lives, even though they were three and five, to know that their dad loved them so much. He prayed so hard for every single one of them.
Special. And they're probably doing so well also because you created a healthy environment for them to be able to talk about them. I've met widows where they don't talk about their late spouse, their kids don't talk about them. And that's something from day one, I knew I wanted to do. And so we still, and even I'm remarried and we still talk about Luke and my, you know, new husband's comfortable with that and the kids. And we've created a place where it's safe to talk about your dad. And I'd be oh, your dad would have loved this. Or oh man, you look like your dad, you know, just all the stuff.
Yes.
And so absolutely. You've created that environment, which has made it healthy for them to continue to talk about it. So great job with that. What would you say has been your biggest challenge as a widow? I know there's a lot of challenges. If you could think of one or a few, I'm sure the audience can relate.
I think it's probably losing my encourager, that person that supported me. And I say all the time that is a secondary loss that I didn't ever anticipate.
Yeah, that's huge.
Because he's the person that encouraged me to stand up for myself, to not let anybody should on me, tell me what to do. And he supported me. He encouraged me to chase my dreams. He encouraged me to do all the things. And so on those really hard parenting days, when there's nobody here telling me hey, you're doing a great job, your kids are great. Or to just step in and handle things for me. There isn't anybody to do that. And that is when I feel the void and the missing there. I joke all the time that people use their spouses as excuses for things oh, he doesn't want me to do this. It's really them. We all know it's really them, but I don't have that person.
Right. So
if I say no to something, it's people know that it's me saying no.
Yeah, I know that's so true.
There's nobody there that's got my back that's say no.
Right, exactly. So what is, it's been 5 or 6 years, how many years?
Yeah, August will be 6 years.
6 years. So what is life like now for you and your kids?
So we live in Texas.
Okay.
We moved to Texas a few years ago because my best friend at the time lived here, and I needed a fresh start to heal and move forward and see where life was going to take us. We are super involved with church. I am a small group leader, and the kids do Awanas and kids church and all the things. We did return to homeschooling this year, but they're going to be going back to private school in the fall, which I'm excited about. It's a new season for me too. And I think it'll be good for all of us. It's been a great year as far as us growing together and learning and spending lots of time together. It was two oldest, it's their last year in elementary school. So it was a good year for us to figure out a good balance.
Yeah.
And it meant we could travel a lot, which travel is my outlet. I do it to run away from problems, but I also do it to just enjoy life. It's Ben and I traveled a lot. And so I took a little break from that, but the kids and I have, you know, we've hit 45 states together and we've hit seven countries, eight countries now. And they like to travel just as much as I do. We fly to see family in North Carolina and Maine and Ohio a lot. I think family is super important. So we do a lot of that. And one day, Lord willing, maybe our family will grow. But for now we're learning to be content with the four of us. And that has been a growing experience for me as well, to feel like we are a complete family when we don't feel complete.
Right. Which kind of leads to my next question. This is not on the notes I gave you before. But what are your thoughts on dating again? Because this is a very big topic for widows and widowers. Like, where are you personally? And just like I tell everyone, there's no right or wrong answer. I'm just curious where you're at with that.
I am open to dating. I did move to Texas because I was dating somebody in Texas at the time, and that relationship we were better just as friends. And so I have dated one other person long term since then. And we recently decided we were better off just friends as well. And so online dating is not for me.
Yes.
I have tried that route. and it brought me a great friend. And it took a year of leading through a lot of not
great. Yes. I know. I hear you.
I'm not even sure how to answer that one. I am not dating anybody right now. I am open to the possibility, but I'm really praying that God just throws them in my lap.
Exactly. I think that's a really good thing. Is we have this whole episode about we've done lots on dating because people like to talk about it, but I remember after Luke died, maybe it had been a year or two, and I was crying to my best friend. I was where am I ever going to find somebody? I'm in my 40s. How does this happen? And she's let God write your love story. Cause I'd done the dating apps a little bit here and there and no luck there.
Yeah, no.
Cause literally everyone says they're a Christian. I wouldn't even talk to them unless it said Christian on their profile. And then, I mean, there was one that I think was, but, their life didn't have the fruit of it. And then after that, both Mark and I have very unique love stories. His girlfriend came from a listener from the podcast. So I'm always you need to thank me for asking you to start this podcast because you met Tina. And then Joel and I reconnected from college on Facebook, crazy way. And so I believe that God will bring, the right person for each of us at the right time. If we want, I meet widows who don't want to, and that's okay too.
And that's okay.
That is totally okay. And then also I was just going to share with the listeners, a little bit more about, I love how you're using your story to help back. So tell us what you do with Hope. I keep calling it Hope Media, but that's wrong. Hope for Widows. Is that what we call it?
It's Hope Widows. Yeah. It falls under the umbrella of Hope Media. So,
So
it is there.
What it is and what you do.
Yeah. So Hope Widows is a online community for widows, and it is a membership community that has weekly teaching. And so there is a progress path in there that's to help widows to move from, just surviving to really thriving in widowhood and in this new season. And so we interview people you know, weekly, and we help those people move through that progress path. And it's a great place for community. So it's a place for them to interact with other widows, and a safe place for them to do yes. that. There's some online communities that are all over the place. So it is the company is Christian founded, but yeah. they have created a platform for widows to come together and really join in a community with other widows where they can get the support and encouragement they need. And there's some who are brand new widows in there. There's some who have been widows for a little while and still need that support. But mm-hmm. I am an ambassador for them and do those weekly interviews and teachings with people.
That's awesome. I've had a chance to look at the website a little bit, but yeah, what I did love, it was like, start here, and had like, I'm like, this would be great for a new widow.
Yeah.
So like, oh, okay. And the thing that was hard about for me in all of the Facebook group, there's so much negative, like it's overwhelming sometimes, like hopelessness and like all of this stuff. And so to have a place, I think it's beautiful. So I will definitely put a link in the show notes. If any of our listeners are interested in becoming part of the community, it will be in the show notes. So I have another question for you. What advice, so we have all kinds of widows listening, but a lot of new widows. What advice would you give to a new widow? I know that's a big, big thing too, but like maybe something you wish someone would have told you, or just advice.
So when I meet a new widow, one of the things that they're always asking, and it's always a different question, is this normal? Like, is it normal for me to feel this, or is it normal? There's no normal. It's all normal. It's normal for nothing to feel normal. So that's usually, and it's okay. Like, however you grieve, however much time it takes, however, you know, much you cry, however little you mm-hmm. cry, it's all normal. Whatever you need is what you need. And so that flourish, is mm-hmm. my, like, it's important to feel all those emotions. It's important to, you know, lean into support. I would say, don't isolate, don't turn you know, negative behaviors.
Yes.
But whatever else you do within that is whatever you need. And it is super hard to ask for help, but if people reach out and want to help you, they are trying the best they can to support you. And so it is really hard for us to ask for help, but if somebody really wants to help you, let them help you.
Yes. No, that's really, really good advice. So where can people find you as far as they want to follow you? I'll put links too, but if you want to say it too, where they can find you to follow you, all the things.
So I am on Instagram and Facebook as Trisha Terry, or Choosing Joy in Every Moment. And I also blog at Choosing Joy in Every Moment. So that's the easiest place to find me. Yeah. And then I work for Hope Widows. So you can follow Hope Widows on Instagram or on Facebook as well.
Oh yeah. And you told me you have a new journal. It just came out on Amazon. Can you tell us about that? And we'll put a link to it.
So I finished a journal that is set to help widows move through the different steps of, and they're not real steps, but it's different things on our progress path for Hope Widows, but it also can be used by anyone. And it basically works them through like feeling all your emotions and, you know, learning to talk about those and opening up to share your story. And then, you know, leaning into the Lord and Him, and then finding ways to honor your spouse that has passed while looking to the future. And so it's got journal prompts for each of those things. And it's for the acronym Flourish. So the journal is Flourish.
I love it.
It just helps, you know, to give them, you know, things to share their thoughts. And it has helped me to journal a lot through this season. It helps me to look back at what I wrote 5 years ago when, you know, it was really new emotions. And there are sometimes now when I think I haven't come so far. And then I look back and I think, wow, I've come a long way. So it is a journal for them to, you know, share all those thoughts.
Wow. I'm definitely going to look into that. I was thinking, what a great gift for new widows that I know, meet the people that I meet, maybe even something my nonprofit could get a bunch of them and be able to give them out. So thank you for sharing that. So is there anything else you'd like to share about your story? Anything else you'd like to say?
I think that what is important is to know that it does get better. It is, you will always, you can move forward with the love that you have for the person that you lost, and you can have, you're never going to forget them, but you can live and find joy again. God can turn your mourning into joy. You just have to be open to the fact that he wants to do a new thing with you.
So good. And how, one more question I just thought of, finding joy in every day, is that what you said, or every moment, or?
It's choosing joy in every moment.
Okay. Totally off, but same concept. How do you do that? Like, can you give us an example of, like, it's a hard day, but how do you choose joy in that? What does that practically mean?
So in the very hardest season of my life after losing Ben, I got a gratitude journal.
Okay.
And the end of the day was super hard for me. And so I made myself every night when I got in bed, write down three things that I was thankful for from that day. Because instead of going to sleep thinking about all the horrible things that went wrong and how miserable I was climbing into bed alone, it made me focus on something good. And some days that was really hard. Some days it was really, really hard. And some days it would be my friend Tiffany. She just texted me, and that's in there a lot.
Yeah.
Because
that's good.
She reached out, and it was the end of the day, and I couldn't think of anything that was good, but that was something good.
I love that. Well, thank you for sharing it. And your strength from the Lord is evident. And I love how you are letting God turn beauty from ashes and use your story, because the way I always look at it, and it seems like the same as you, it's like, if I had to go through this, I want to help other people. Like, yes. God gave us our stories for a purpose, and you're already helping a lot of people. And thank you for doing this podcast, because you're reaching even more people that I know your story is going to be an inspiration and hope. Because I know when I was a new widow, I wanted to hear stories like yours. Like, please tell me it gets better. I'm going to be okay. My kids are going to be okay. I'm going to get out of this dark tunnel. But something I like to go back to that I learned in grief recovery, which I know you just became a grief recovery specialist too, is it's not just time that heals. It is what we do with our time. And I can see from your story that you took steps. You just didn't sit there like you're like, you wrote the good things every day. You reached out, you know, you had all these things. And so I want to make sure our audience knows too, that time, yes, it does make it better, but you've got to take those steps. And the fact that you're listening to this podcast means you're taking steps. So congratulations that you are trying to do things to move forward. Well, thank you everyone for being here. Thanks again, Tricia, for letting us hear your story. We'd love it if you subscribe. You can do that on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you listen. If you want to give us a rating or review, we'd love that too. We are looking for more guests. You can email us at widowtoosoonm, like as in Mark and Michelle, at gmail.com, or find us on Facebook or Instagram, Widow Too Soon, all the places. And hopefully, yes, next week, Mark should be back, and we'll come back and see you next week. Have a great day.